Hi, Keith Wooden with Story Mosaics here. I'm so excited that I'm sitting across from a friend of mine today, and we're going to be talking a little bit about the complexity and the way a story is put together. So we're just kind of going to be chatting here, and this is the way we're going to be setting up our story mosaics over the time that we sit down together. One of the things, though, that I need to tell you is some of you are saying, hey, you know what? I've never heard an episode of Story Mosaics, and that's because this is our first episode of Story Mosaics, so that makes it a little bit easier, right? So, but the way we're going to set this up is the first week of each month, we're going to do a story mosaic that is just me telling a story and kind of giving you a guide on how the story structure exists. And then the next time, we're going to be listening to someone just like Brent and sharing a little bit about a great story from a storyteller. Then the third time is actually your time to step up to the mic. We'll have some of our listeners be telling their stories. And then the last Tuesday of each month, one of the things we're going to be doing is we're going to go through some of the mechanics of telling a great story. So we're looking forward to that. And I'm excited about how that's going to unravel and how unfold. Yeah, I don't want it to unravel on us, okay? but Brent, it's so good to have you. Brent and I have been friends for a long time, and we sat across from each other over coffee a lot of times in Panera. We've shared every detail of our life. But one of the things about you that most people won't know immediately, Brent, is that you make part of your living telling stories, right?
That's a big part of my, that's probably 2/3 of it.
I would say, yeah. And not only in the different venues, what venues do you use to tell stories in?
Oh, I mean, mostly who I speak to, like whether it be my podcast or, you know, even the books that I do, it's mostly towards men. That's kind of been my passion, is to, you know, encourage, uplift men. And storytelling, as you and I both know, if you want to capture a man's attention, you have to tell a story in such a way that puts him on the edge of his seat, or you're going to lose him.
I just love that, because putting them on the edge of the seat was one of the things that I thought about every one of your stories. They just put you right at the edge. And I'll admit it, that I'm a little bit jealous, because your stories are, so many of them are filled with these moments where you're encountering a wolf or a bear or a snake
Or an angry wife.
I'm kidding. Those kind of stories. And that's just not been my history. In fact, I'll tell something on one of your podcasts about one of the big six of Africa that I met. Well, there's only five, I know, but...
Don't even go there. All right.
I met the sixth
okay? And I want to get you on my podcast, because your story is amazing.
Yeah. Well, except for... it's a different kind of sit on the edge of your seat, isn't it? Hey, so what is your podcast?
It's called Unleashed.
And tell me a little bit about that. Is it always a story? How do you unfold Unleashed?
I mean, when we first started out, I think like anything, when you begin something, you're learning what your listener is looking for. You learn to find a rhythm for yourself. You learn what's effective by looking at analytics. How long are they listening? Did you hold their attention long enough?
That's right.
So there's just so much involved, but we've been doing this now. I think we're like on episode 67, which is, I mean, we're less than a year and a half.
Yeah, but think about that, because most of them stop. You go out on the podcast and you see that most podcasts end at about 15, 20.
Yeah, they're done. I've got a number. You can look these up go onto Audible, and there's a lot of information out there where you can find out about, you know, in doing a podcast, how to be able to do it well. And they'll tell you most podcasters don't last but about 5 to 10 episodes, and they're done.
Yeah. And it's hard work. I think you're on your second episode today. Not only did you do one of your own, but you're here with me across the table.
Well, and when I get home, I've got to go upstairs and get things put together to get it out for my audience. And again, that's something I had to talk through with my wife. She knows that my dedication and passion is partly with this, because it's part of my calling too.
Yeah.
And so when you get home, it's not done.
No, it's just 2/3 done, and you've got to wrap it up and put the rest of you have to put the makeup on the pig, so to speak.
and you've been telling stories, you know, like all day, like if you're speaking or doing a podcast, and make sure you still have something left in the tank when you get home.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I've invited you in, Brent, because I want you to tell a story. And like I say, I've sat across from you on countless occasions. I read all your books. I have one of your books that's an audio audiobook that I listen to regularly, because for me, it takes a while for that material to sink in or a different application comes to me. But you tell such great stories in your book, and this is one I've asked you to share today. We'll have you back again for another opportunity where we can talk about story structure. But I just want you to tell this story of, I'll just call it rock bottom.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead and
tell
me this story.
You know what? The other thing I think, too, I want to say this real quick is
you're fine.
We can tell other people's stories, but there's nothing more authentic and more passionate than something has happened to you.
That's right.
Because you're able to describe it through your lens in a way that people can, they feel like they're there.
Well, and in fact, the heart of Story Mosaics is this: everyone has a story.
Yeah.
And all we want to do is help them tell it better. That's my passion, is helping people tell their stories better, because I believe that every story is also transformative in our own lives, but it's transformative in those who hear those stories. And those can be huge transformations, life-changing, even eternal transformations that take place because a story was told well.
Yeah. And your stories were meant to be told.
Yes.
Well, let me kind of go back on that. The story you were talking is that you had messaged me right before we came in here, that was afternoon, and you're like, hey, remember that story where you were fishing? And I'm like, okay, which one? You know, I'm like, I've got to go through my head. And then you mentioned like a couple different ones, and I'm going, okay, well, was it a raft? I'm like, well, there's been several with rafts in them. Unfortunately, there's too many of these weird stories. But the one you were talking about, it was crazy because it's been a number of years ago. It was around 2003, I think it was. I had moved back to Pennsylvania where I had grown up, you know, that – the outback to me, the woods is where I feel closest to God. Mm. There's just something that, was it because, you know, Adam, you know, Eve was created in this beautiful wilderness, or not in the wilderness, in the lush beauty of the garden, where man's created in the wilderness. So is there some connection? I have no idea, but I know that when I'm out in nature, there's something in me that just comes alive, like nowhere else, not even at a football game or a different sporting event. When I'm just out there and I get to be a part of what God created, something happens inside of me that happens nowhere else. It's a transformation, honestly, where I feel more alive in those places than I do anywhere.
Well, you've already captured the man's heart right there, because I think you're right.
Well, and you know what I'm talking about. When think about your own story for a second. When you go back and you begin to relive something that really meant something to you, it could have been maybe a moment with your father. Well, immediately there's a different emotion that just got tapped into because you can mention that. It could be good or it could be bad. But so this was actually a wonderful experience, kind of. It ends up being that, but I'm sure we'll get to that later. So I had fished a place up in northwestern Pennsylvania called Elk Creek. And it's a beautiful, crystal clear stream. And as a matter of fact, the water out in the middle of it, in most places, is nowhere deeper than maybe knee deep to maybe waist deep. But there's steelhead and trout in there. And when the sun hits that water just right, when you have in the right spots, you can see those trout turning on their side. You can tell if it was a rainbow or a brownie. You see it shimmering, and you kind of know where to cast because you can see where the lure or the salmon egg or garden worm needs to drift past this thing in order to connect with it. So I had never fished Elk Creek before, and a buddy of mine that I had grown up with, he said, man, I want to take you to this spot and show you one of my honey holes. Well, that's all you have to say.
That's all you have to say.
It's your honey hole. I'm in. Because you've already learned it, right?
Yeah, because he's a guide. I mean,
he was my guide.
He's your guide in this.
And so we get to this location, and he teaches me. You know, there's other guys fishing. They're kind of doing so-so, but this guy's a master fisherman.
Mm.
So there are two streams that come together. Now, here's the thing about Elk Creek. You have all these feeder streams that come into it, but the only outlet is Lake Erie. And
wow.
I didn't understand much of what that would play into the next several days, a little bit later on, what would happen, but I'll get back to that. So there's two streams that come together, and as they go around like a bend in front of us, it comes into one big stream. But the transition that happens where the two streams come together on the bend, because there's the force of two streams coming
that's
together,
right.
It makes an incredible whirlpool.
Yeah.
And again, that's where a lot of these steelhead and trout love to be able to get in there because
that's where it stirs up everything.
Oh,
that's where their food comes from.
All the sediment, the bugs, everything is coming in, more oxygen, everything is happening there.
That's great.
But the other thing that's coming into there, which I would discover later, is when you have the spring melt, that means the things that have fallen in from the fall, like, you know, trees and branches, will also collect there, which can make it really tricky to fish. You kind of have to try a few casts and make sure you know where you're going to be casting, not getting tangled up. But anyhow, we caught our limit. I mean, I'm not kidding. 20 minutes. I mean, we were done. I don't remember if it was, I think it was five trout was the limit. And I was so blown away. I said to my buddy, Greg, I said, my son is a, he's about to turn eight this year. And I said, he's never really caught fish like this. Yeah, I think the biggest thing he ever got was a little sunfish. You know, it wasn't even, right. not even as big as your palm, probably half that size. You know, the one where they, the hook is almost as big as
that's
they
right.
are. And he's giving it to you, Daddy, take this off. This is really cool, but I don't want to touch it. So I decided I want to take him back. Well, this is in the month of April. Well, in northwestern Pennsylvania, you could get a day that might hit 60 or it could be in the 30s. Well, it happened to be 4 days after I fished it. It was in the 30s that morning, but the problem was we had torrential rains, and I mean really bad rains, which you can get, you know, in April, just coming down, and the water depth had changed. But I wasn't even thinking about that. The only thing I'm thinking of is, well, first of all, we don't want to get soaked. We don't want to go when it's raining. And the other thing was the water's probably going to be muddy, which might change the color salmon egg I'm going to use or the lure, you know, whatever. That's the way I'm thinking. Because again, I wasn't familiar with this stream.
And you're thinking about what you went to introduce your son to.
Yeah, for his first experience.
Yeah, for his experience as well.
He's got to be able to engage. There's got to be a little bit of adventure. But you know what? For an almost eight-year-old, just going with dad, that's adventure.
That's the adventure.
Yeah. So we pack up everything. You know, I wait for the rain to be done. That morning, it was about 32 degrees. I mean, it's cold. And we both get our long johns out. I think I actually had two pair of long johns on. And I had camo pants. And we've got our hip waders. And, you know, his mother had, you know, packed some peanut butter and jelly sandwiches like a mom will do. And, you know, Pringles, you know, put them in a sealed, you know, baggie.
That's
and,
right.
And then, of course, hot chocolate. I mean, first hunt, my dad, you know, we went out. I had that thermos of hot chocolate.
Oh, man.
I still remember that.
You're taking me back, dude. You're taking me back.
I can taste it. I can smell it. I can just, it just brings back great memories. And so we get to this location. It's an hour and 20 minute drive. I don't want to say it was a sacrifice. I'm not a fan of traveling a long way because I've had to travel so much in my life doing other stuff. But this is for my son. And he's excited. You know, and on the way there, you know, he woke up. He couldn't sleep all night. Like, no one can. That first time you get to experience something. And so on the way there, you know, we're telling stories. Now, on the way back, it would be a different story. He'd probably sleep almost the entire
right.
way back. But on the way there, it was, Dad, tell me about this. Tell me about that. Building the excitement. So we get to this location. We pull back this dirt road. And there's kind of a pull-off where other cars had parked, you know, 4 days before. But when we get there, there's no cars. And I'm going, wait a second. I mean, the season's in. I mean, it just opened up like 2 weeks ago. This should be packed. And I couldn't figure it out. So I kind of looking around. I wasn't using a GPS. I had just remembered this stuff. I mean, but back then, I don't even know if we were using them in our cars.
That's right. I don't
yet.
Think so. I don't think so.
This was 2003. And so we get out and I'm walking around. No, it's dark, but it's starting to get light. So I've got my flashlight out and I'm shining it down this path. And it looked different because it was full of puddles that were huge. And I'm thinking, well, that's not a big deal. You know, we'll just walk. We got hip waders on, not a big deal. So I get the tackle box, you know, that he's got his little kid's tackle box. And I get two fishing poles. Yeah, I think he had a Zebco 33, that little, you know, and I've got all my nice stuff. And
that's
anybody's
right.
got his
he's
kids.
Got a Zebco.
And I know, here's what's going to happen. And dads, when you take your son fishing, plan on just untangling his line all day. Lay your pole down, make it about him.
That's right.
There's a teaching moment. You kind of start with that, but then make it about him. So we get back to the water's edge, and it's starting to get light out. You know, you can see the two streams coming together. And the thing is where those two streams came together, where it hits the whirlpool, the thing that made it so magical is there was about a 20-foot space, like a little rock, like shale rock island that you could set all your gear on. And you could just, you know, you could unpack your stuff and you could stand on that little island and cast upstream into that one of the two streams and let it drift right into the whirlpool as it comes around you, wraps around you to your right. And so I'm going, we gotta get to that spot. Well, as we get to the edge of the water, it sounded different even. And I was like, why does this sound louder? I wasn't putting two and two together. So I'm shining my flashlight because I can start to see, but I want to see what the color of the water is going to be like to determine, you know, bright lure, dark lure, whatever. And it was more like, instead of being crystal clear, it was more like my son's chocolate milk from breakfast that
day. Wow.
I mean, that's how cloudy and dark it was. But I got to go fishing. You know, this is father-son. I came this far. And so
the water's up a little bit.
Well, I find that out.
Okay.
I get him up on my back. You know, I've got his legs tucked under my arms, and I've got fishing poles in one hand and his lunch bag, and I've got my tackle box and other stuff, and just trying to hold on to him. And so I think this shouldn't be a big deal because it wasn't that swift, you know. For me to cross it. Well, I find out when I get out maybe 10 feet, what should have been just, I mean, half your shin deep, it's now up over my knees and halfway up my thighs to my hips. I'm going, wow.
This has changed.
This has changed. But again, you know, that man mentality, I've got to take my son fishing. We'll make it happen. I get out in the middle of the stream, and now it's no longer just on my waist. It's now flowed over into my hip waders, and I'm trying to get out there, and it's up to my chest. And I don't know if you guys have ever fished in a stream before, like with a shale rock bottom, where the water is so swift that as you take the next step, you kind of start to float up with the next one, and it's sucking you downstream, and you're trying to get the angle right, because with every step, you're going downstream rather than upstream, and you're realizing I didn't time how we should have gotten there, right? Because I'm getting sucked downstream. But I get out in the middle and I'm thinking, okay, I got to get my son to that. We'll find the island. We'll be okay. So I finally see what little bit of rock is still, you know, not submerged. And it's like 5 feet. I mean, you could barely see it. I'm going, there's no way we're going to be able to fish on that. There's not room. Well, by the time we get there, I mean, my long johns, my camo, everything, I'm full of water. I mean, my hip waders are full. I mean, just full of water. And it was still about freezing temperature, and I'm going, this was a bad idea. So we get to the island.
And your son really is not fully aware of the danger, though.
Well, it's like when you have a child on the stairs.
Yeah.
And you hold your arms out. He doesn't even think about it. He jumps off the stairs into
your arms.
That's
what's amazing at that moment, is because there's such a trust element here.
Yeah.
But you're aware of the danger before he's ever aware of it.
Well, at this point, he's heard so many adventure stories.
Oh,
I want to be on an adventure with Dad, right?
Yeah. And they always come out great.
Oh, yeah. They always have this happy ending. It's like, wow. So anyhow, so I get everything and I lay it down. And I go, buddy, we're in trouble. I get him off my back. He goes, Dad, you're shaking really bad. I said, son, I'm freezing. I said, we're not going to be able to stay. And so I'm trying to think of a plan. And I go, how can I get out of here? Because I'm thinking, I can't go back the same way.
No.
We're slippery. We're freezing. When you get really, really cold, everything begins to tighten up. I mean, I've had hypothermia twice. I know what it can be like. And I know that in a matter of minutes, I'm going to become hypothermic because I don't have the warmth that I need now. When your body core dips below 95 degrees, everything begins to change. I've been hypothermic before where I would go to tie my shoes and couldn't remember how to do it. And my buddies saw me doing it one time. And it was on an elk hunt in Colorado. They had to get my wet clothes off of me, get a tarp over top of me, give me hot fluids to get my body temperature back.
I remember you telling me about that story as well.
That's just another one. One of many. So I said, Garrett, here's what we're going to have to do. I said, right across from us on the other side of the whirlpool, there's a cliff that kind of circles around that whirlpool. It's about 30 feet tall. It's on the one side of the stream. It's like this beautiful cliff. And that's what it was probably carved out with these waters coming through here. But there's like a little bit of a ledge on that cliff that comes down to the water, and I could see it. And I said, buddy, here's what I'm going to do. I'll take the gear. I'll go below the whirlpool where I think I can get across there. And I'll take the gear, so all I have to do is focus on you when I come back. And I'll walk that ledge around that cliff, get around the whirlpool to where there's two streams, because I'm thinking, well, two streams have to be shallower than one big one. I did the math. I'm going, that makes sense. I still got my wits about me at this point. So I get the gear. I said, stay here. And I go below the whirlpool, and I make my way across, and I get to that ledge. And I was able to make my way all the way around the whirlpool to the first of two streams. Well, when I get above the whirlpool and I step into the first of the two streams, my foot lands on top of a moss-covered rock, and I slip sideways, and I fall on my side, but my hip waders are pointed toward the current coming in.
Sure.
It's just like if you've ever seen—
filled up just like that.
Right now. And the power of it just kind of like sucks you into this whirlpool, and that's exactly what happened. I was drug right into this thing, and as soon as it goes in, it kind of pulls you down. Well, the problem was there's logs and sticks and everything from that spring melt like I mentioned earlier, and now I'm getting tangled up. And I don't know if you guys have ever gone like body surfing at the ocean where you get on top of that wave and if you hit it wrong, it'll throw you under the wave and you're tumbling over and over and you can't tell which way is up or down. You're kind of waiting to see what happens to find your way out. But I had to—
In fact, it's so disorienting because you're completely being just washing machined, if you will.
You don't know which way is up and down.
No. No.
Because the power of the current doesn't allow you to feel gravity.
And people don't understand that until you've been in one of those vortexes.
Oh, it's crazy. So I can remember thinking, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, because I thought I'm going to die and my son's watching this whole thing happen.
Oh,
I mean, I'm literally, that's my conversation with God at that point. And I couldn't tell you what happened. All I know is that whirlpool was normally about 8 to 10 feet deep. And I found out later on it was more like 14 to 16 feet deep that day. But whatever it was, when I was getting all tangled up and I'm getting sucked down, the only thing I can remember specifically is I hit something hard. I couldn't tell you if it was a big rock. I couldn't tell you if it was a log at the bottom. But whatever that thing was, I was able to get my feet on it and push myself up. I get my face above the surface of the water. And I'm backstroking to my son, tackle boxes and fishing pole stuff still in my hands. Go figure that one. You know, holding on to it. And here's my son. And he's like, you know, dad. And I'm yelling, Garrett, you know, stay there. So I backstroke my way with all this stuff. I get to that little island that's left to him. And he says, Dad, your lips are turning blue. I said, buddy, we're in trouble. I said, I don't know how I'm going to do this. Not knowing what to do, all we could do, there's nobody there. We begin, because everybody was smart enough, you know. So I begin to scream as loud as I can, yelling for help. And I hear a noise up on the top of that 30-foot rock wall across from the whirlpool. And I hear this voice. I look up, and there's this teenage boy. And he begins to yell, Dad. His dad happened to be the local fish commissioner who came to see if anybody was stupid enough to fish on this day. And I'm like, here's my sign. That's me.
That's me.
So they see it. And there was actually two brothers. And so they had a way to get down around the stream, and they make a human chain out of these sticks. And they get across the waters. They kind of spread out and get us out of there. And the fish commissioner, or game commissioner, whatever he was, he takes my son on his back because he realized I'm getting weak. I'm shaking. And as he begins to make his way across, Garrett even slips off of his back. But he grabbed a hold of the top of his collar and pulled him out. And now Garrett's soaked too. Well, we get back to the truck. And, you know, I had packed a change of clothes because you never know what a then, you know, almost 8-year-old kid might get into. I fell into a pond when I was about 5. I still remember. Yeah. We get to the back of the truck. And I had a change of clothes for both of us for whatever reason. I don't normally do that. And we get in the back. And as we're changing clothes, my son, without me saying a word, he begins to pray. And again, those lessons he's been listening to, this was one of them evidently. And he just begins to say, God, thank you for rescuing us from that watery grave. And he said, thank you for sending those guardian angels. And then he calls them the Navy SEALs of the universe. It was really cool.
Let me press the pause button here just for a second. And I think the audience already understands why I've invited you to here to tell a story and how powerful the story is. And the whole time is I'm being drawn into the story. I'm experiencing the story with you. And I almost hate to do this, but because we're really about not only story, but teaching people how to tell stories, I'm going to dissect it just a little bit, okay? But the first thing I want to do is this. Not every experience in your life has been a great story to tell. You know?
Right.
You do live some mundane moments, okay?
Right.
So what makes this story, and like I say, because I've read your books, because I'm a part of that as well, and because you and I just tell stories all the time across the table, what made that a great story to tell? Now, I know we're dissecting it, and we're pulling some of it out, and I don't want you to jump too far forward on me, but I want to know, what made that story a story to tell?
You and I were talking before we even started, and I said, you know, whenever I go to speak to people, well, it doesn't matter whether it's men, because that's my target audience for mostly what I do. I like my publishers because that's kind of where they've put me to speak to men.
Sure.
But everybody loves to be put on the edge of their seat.
That's right.
I don't care whether it's a romance. I don't care whether it's a drama, whatever it is. We want to see something unfold because we want to feel like we're a part of it.
That's right.
One of the things I always say is, you know, men want to know that they're a part of something bigger than themselves. And that's why our stories are so important because they tell the history of our life. And so what made that story so important to tell? I think relationally, you can connect through it.
Yep.
I think it puts people on the edge of their seat. I think there's wisdom to be gained with this kind of a thing. And I think it wakes our hearts up.
You know, and I think as just a storyteller, you recognize these things intuitively. You know, you not only experienced it, but you know there was something at that moment that changed this from just a mundane to a monumental experience. And in that moment, there was an impossible moment situation to be overcome. And it was absolutely essential that the audience, the listener, recognize. I mean, for me, there were a couple in your story, okay? There's the moment where you start to recognize you're losing it. you know?
Yeah.
That's the impossible of the elements, okay? Then there's the impossible when you turn sideways and you start to go under. That undertow is something that you cannot escape. I mean, it's impossible at that moment.
Yeah.
So something has to take place.
If something doesn't happen, you're not hearing my voice telling the story right now.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And they're not sitting across from you. And that's what I want to get across to people is they don't always have to be life-threatening, but there has to be something that we have to overcome for it to be a great story. And that's what's so beautiful about your storytelling is you naturally find the rhythm of that. But we're going to take it a step further, okay?
Because let me say one thing with that real quick. There's something that we might miss this, or maybe you had it, but when I was talking just momentarily, here I am at the bottom of this hole, and you're like, oh my gosh. One of the things that I try to put into my stories sometimes, it depends on how long the story is, because people can only stay on the edge of their seat for so long before you have a little bit of a pressure release valve just for a moment.
That's right.
To let them come up for air for a second. And that's when I said, like with the local fish commissioner, you know, who would be stupid enough to fish on this day? I'm like, well, here's my sign.
They have to have that little bit of oxygen that says, oh, thank you for letting me breathe.
Yeah.
I've held my breath long enough.
Because you've taken a really scary moment and you've kind of like, okay, I can hear the rest of it now.
Yeah. And that's so beautiful. I'm glad you captured that for us as well. You know what? Every story, great story, has a transformation moment as well. And I don't want to leave this part of it without recognizing the transformation moment. That is, you mentioned that men long to know that there's something bigger than themselves that they are a part of.
Yeah.
And in a great story, especially for you, when you're capturing men's hearts in adventure, in that excitement, there is something that is greater than them. And to encounter it, I want to just emphasize that for a moment.
Yeah.
To encounter that moment, encounter that force, encounter that transformative event means life change. And I'm not embarrassed to say that there are eternal aspects to be gathered out of everyday captured stories.
Yep.
And for you, there was an eternal aspect because you had a friend that kind of came alongside of you and he said—
I called him my spiritual Yoda.
Okay. Well, that's
right.
Great. Well, can I tell you? Yeah. Can I tell you that screenplay is one of the great templates for tremendous storytelling. And I always tell people when I tell you how simple the template is or the matrix is for Star Wars storytelling, you're going to never look at a movie the same way again. I'm not going to ruin that for you yet.
Oh, I'm anxious to hear it.
Yeah, but there was your spiritual Yoda, your guide. Yeah. You called this story Rock Bottom.
Yeah.
That's the transformation. Tell me a little bit about that.
You know, when I had originally was writing this, I was writing a book called Into the Wilds. It was with Whitaker House Publishers, if I remember right, back then. And I had moved back here and I was beginning to write this book. And a man who had been mentoring me for a number of years, who was amazing with finding those aha moments. You know, I always love telling a story because to me, I get to relive it again.
That's right.
I feel the excitement. I really do. When I tell
That's
it again,
right. I can hear it in your voice, but I get to sit across from you in this moment too. I see it.
Oh, because when you get to relive it, and here's the cool thing. When I came back and I moved back from Pennsylvania back to here, and it was one of my other rock bottom moments that brought me back here to begin with, which that's another story.
That's
in itself.
A whole other story.
But I sat down with him and I said, hey, I'm putting this in a new book that I'm working on. And I entered it just like I did with you. You know, that he sent those Navy SEALs of the universe is what my God or my son called guardian angels. He thinks because he likes Navy SEALs at the time. And so I said, hey, what do you think of that story? And he says, I think that's a great story. He says, but I think you kind of missed the point. And I said, what?
Thank you very much for telling me I missed the story.
Thanks. And here, put them in. Here's a breath mint. Never turn one down. So he said, well, let me ask you a question. And again, this is one of the most, even whether you're a storyteller or whether you're in coaching, asking questions is so important, because if you listen well and you trust others to say, what impacted you?
Yes.
What moved you? What didn't move you? Be willing to be in risk, to be honest enough to ask, what could I have done better? So this is what he did with me. And so here's what ended up happening. He said, so let me ask you a question. He said, was it a good thing or a bad thing? Because he you know, heard the whole story. When I hit bottom in that whirlpool, he says, was it a good thing or a bad thing? You hit bottom. I said, did you not hear the story? It was terrible. I'm stuck in all this brush and I'm about to drown and I'm crying out to God. My son's watching this, you know. And he said, but you said the whirlpool was how deep? I said, well, normally it was like 8 to 10 feet. And they said it was like 14 to 6 feet. He said, so you were sucked down that far. I said, I was. I said, it was terrible. He said, let me ask you a question. Was it a good thing or a bad thing you hit rock bottom? And at first I said it was terrible, but then he said this, but what would have happened had you only been sucked down in that whirlpool to 8 feet or 6 feet or maybe even only 2 feet in a whirlpool? I said, I'd have drowned.
Yes.
And so he asked me again, was it a good thing or a bad thing you hit bottom? I told that story this last weekend to a group of men.
Did you really?
I did. I haven't told it in a while. And at the very end, all I had to say, and a lot of these guys struggle with addictions. And at the very end of it, I just said, let me ask you guys, are you at that place where you're able to look at this and go, was it a good thing or a bad thing when you hit bottom? You're here today because something is stirring in you because you want something different. That's a good thing.
And you're hitting rock bottom.
And you're hitting rock bottom.
You know, and that's, those are the transformative moments that I look for in every story, is because good stories change our lives. Now, you know, I'm going to come on your show, your podcast in a few weeks, and I'm going to tell a story that is just humorous, okay?
Oh, but it's awesome. I can't wait.
But the humor in that story is still transformative, because sometimes laughter is the air, the oxygen we need. And so I don't want everybody to think that every story has to be dramatic. No. Sometimes they're just fun, but they're transformative in their nature.
And you're incredible story. Listen to you preach for years. You're just amazing with how you're able to, what's the word? Would it be called self-deprecating? What's the word?
Yeah, I'm self-deprecating. That's for
very
sure.
much, but it makes you approachable.
Yeah. And I think that that's one of the things that also is a great part of storytelling. Not everyone has to be the hero in the same way we define heroes. Sometimes it's a self-deprecation that gives us oxygen. Brent, I'm so thankful that you joined us today, especially on our inaugural drop of the first podcast, so to speak.
Oh, I'm honored. This is awesome.
One of the things we're going to do is I just want to direct the folks to the webpage and the podcast so that they can go listen to it, so that they can go out to storymosaics.com. And the first thing they can do is I've published a few books and stories and both for magazines, et cetera, and you're in the publishing world. And we're also in the verbal storytelling world. And so one of the things that I want them to do is be able to go out to the website on storymosaics.com and just download 5 stories and shoot us your email. Let us get to know you a little bit better and become a part of this whole thing we're calling Story Mosaics and the opportunity for you to tell the story. And I want to tell people that I believe that they're God's stories. The God stories that are inside of them. I want them to be able to tell their stories and tell them better. So thanks for joining us today. And we'll look forward to doing this again. Maybe this becomes a regular part of our lives as well. It'd be very, very fun because maybe we just drag the equipment and Eric into Panera and we turn Panera into that kind of setting. Hey, thanks so much for joining us on Story Mosaics.